Thank you. Well, actually, it's a good introduction. But before I start, I have to admit that I actually initially drafted the slides in German, and the thinking that went into it was in German. So I translated it. It will probably in parts not appear entirely professional the way it is now, but I hope we get through it properly. It shouldn't matter too much because it's strange language stuff anyway from the beginning. Thank you for the introduction. It's actually a very good point, and I can start with that, because if the UK, or parts of it, who knows, actually ends up leaving the European Union, it might still be, in the end, part of the European Economic Area, so it might end up with a status something like Norway or Switzerland does, that so that it, in terms of data protection, the European Economic Area at this point is more or less the same, shall we say, as the European Union. But it might end up, and you know, people are pushing for that, it might end up having a special status, you know, the best of both worlds stuff, and that may end up with the UK not being part of the European Economic Area, and therefore it might well need a UK privacy shield. Because this is what this is about, transferring personal data in the terms of, you know, its legal meaning, to countries who are not part of the European Economic Area. And to start the whole thing, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to look at what the privacy shield is or what it might be once it's done, without really starting with what the whole, you know, what caused the whole problem. Why do people have to work so hard to come up with something so complicated? Why is that? There's a history, a certain formal legal setting that requires that. And I will then only briefly spend some time at what other ways there are to transfer data there, and will then end up at the privacy shield and trying to have a look at what, not in detail, but what in principle is written there and how it is supposed to work and where we stand in the process. The core of the problem is that from an EU law perspective, the EU is good, or the EEA is good, and everything that happens within that, those territories, is good and uniform and assessed as okay, and therefore there are no problems with cross-border data transfers within that area. But consequently, everything that is outside that area is, well, we don't know how bad it is, but that not us not knowing means that we have to treat it as bad, as forbidden territories, if you will. So you can't transfer data there unless certain conditions are met. And those conditions, there are some statutory ones, and I'll get to those, that sound good, but hardly ever apply. And then there is the more muddled stuff that you may have come into contact with that are called modern clauses, and with a view to the United States formerly, safe harbor principle, the safe harbor framework. The idea was that essentially the EU was looking for a way to counter its own, the problem that it created itself by saying everything outside the EU is bad. So it gave the Commission the power to make decisions with a capital D, so it's a formal way to get there, which basically has binding power on the member states, and that decision can be that in a particular country, third country, the level of data protection afforded by the laws, the system, the whatever, is actually sufficiently adequate in comparison with what we have in the EU to say that data may actually lawfully be transferred there. The EU has, and I'm actually not really, I'm speaking rather freely, I suppose, not really sticking to my slides. The EU has made a number of decisions to that effect where it has said that certain entire countries are actually okay in terms of receiving personal data from the EU. For example, Argentina, Switzerland, Israel, and Uruguay as well, and some others, well, I think one or two more, which kind of transported those countries to, you know, take part in what we like so much, which is our data protection realm in the EU. And that did not work with the United States. They could have, I mean, you know, they could have tried to go the same way, but they did not, because I'm assuming, I think nothing has ever been published to that effect, but I'm assuming that the Commission couldn't quite come to terms, you know, couldn't quite arrive at the conclusion that the general statutory data protection level is actually comparable to the EU. So what they did was, created a framework, and it's called Safe Harbor Framework. It's just a catchphrase. They created that, and what it was is it's an adequacy, you know, it is a decision that basically said, well, the country itself is not adequately protected, but if companies that process data in that country or have its seat in that country, if they adhere to certain principles and self-certify accordingly and register for a list, that those, you know, not the country, but those companies were actually safe places to receive personal data from the EU. And it was always a bit flimsy, and there had always for years, and especially in the last 5-6 years, has been a lot of criticisms saying that the framework doesn't work and no one's ever looking into it and it's just a smokescreen and so on and so on. And that criticism, obviously, or criticism, you know, without anything else, doesn't change anything. So we needed essentially a court case for someone to look into that. And Mr. Schrems, I don't know, guy from Austria, you probably heard of him, took it upon himself, not only in this setting, but very generally, to take it to Facebook, basically. And, you know, going all down all kinds of roads to, well, whether you like it or not, proclaim that Facebook is essentially abusing the user's data and so on. And one of the roads he took is he complained in Ireland to the local data protection authority, saying that because Facebook Europe has its seat there, and he said, basically said, you got to do something, because Facebook Europe, you're the competent authority to do something about it, and you can't just look, you know, at all those wrongdoings that happen in your country. It's your job. So, and then the authority did look at it and came to the conclusion that everything is okay, and where maybe things are not okay, they couldn't look into it because, you know, the data transfers from Europe to the United States were, shall we say, protected by the Safe Harbor decision made by the Commission in 2000. So they said, well, whatever we may think, there is the Safe Harbor principle, and we got to stick to that. We can't make our own decisions in some respects. So there you have it. But they recognized, you know, and then went to the courts in Ireland, and the court in Ireland said, well, we got to bring that up to the European Court of Judgment. Not Court of Judgment, European Court, ICJ, Court of Judgment. That's what it is. And the court came to the conclusion that indeed the decision that is the Safe Harbor Framework, the Commission decision, is in fact invalid, and it thereby simply no longer exists. It's history, you know. And what that meant was that one of the most used fundament for transferring data to the United States was thereby gone from one day to the next, basically. So ever since then, people have been trying to work at replacing the Safe Harbor Framework, and that ends up being the Privacy Shield. We'll get to that. as you can see in the timeline, actually, when it comes to business, people start to work rather swiftly. Normally, everything in terms of, you know, EU legislation takes years and years and years. And as you can see, I mean, people had started to work on stuff in 2013, essentially. But when you look at the timeline, it is not even half a year after the judgment was passed that the United States and the Commission agreed on a draft for a replacement of the Safe Harbor decision, which will now probably be the EU-US Privacy Shield decision. So it's the same setup, essentially. It's just called differently, has different rules. And people have had a chance to voice their opinions, which mostly have been rather critical of what the draft says. Latest stuff in April, and currently negotiations are ongoing. So we're still working with the draft that we got in February this year. But it is known that negotiations have been ongoing. People have been working on the wording of the decision, the draft decision. And it is currently in the Article 31 working group. That's where it's placed, and it's actually should be a G working both times. As I just now see, and that features the representative of the member states, and the Article 31 working group needs to essentially consent to the decision, otherwise it can't be made. And that's what we stand. But the plan is actually to have something in place, a final draft with everyone's consent, in August of this year. So it's 2 months to go still. And now, when we look at the future that the Privacy Shield may or may not have, we need to think about, well, what made the court, the European Court of Justice, actually say that the Safe Harbor decision is invalid? Essentially, the EU law prescribes that if the Commission wants to decide that a country or a certain framework is actually adequately protective of personal data, it needs to assess the state of the law in that particular country in depth, comprehensively. And the ICJ did not say that the state of the data protection laws in the United States is bad. What they said is, Commission, you didn't look at it. You just came up with something without actually taking a look at what you're actually deciding. You know, you have to assess this, you know, the laws, and you didn't do that. So for that procedural problem alone, the decision, Safe Harbor decision, is invalid. And secondly, what they said is that the member states have independent data protection authorities. They have to be independent. It's at the core of the whole thing. And no Commission decision can restrict the decision-making power and the power to investigate a case just because it thinks that the state of the data protection laws in another country is actually adequate. That takes away from the independence of the data protection authorities. So that was the second problem. And the result is that since the Safe Harbor decision is gone, the United States is as bad a country in data protection terms as any other country in the world, regardless of how it actually is. And all data transfers that have relied on Safe Harbor are essentially unlawful now. From one day to the next, there has been, I'll get to that, a bit of a grace period, but that grace period ended at the end of February. So at this point, you can't just transfer data to the United States. Doesn't matter how well regarded or whatever your recipient company is. You need to do something additional to be allowed to transfer. And that is, and I'll have to briefly mention that because they've been in the press as well. And one of those instruments, the only influence that the only instrument that you can actually control as a company or come up with yourself, use yourself, is the so-called EU model clauses. You will probably have heard of that. It's the same thing as in German. It's usually Auftragsdaten verarbeitung. It works differently, but that's kind of like the, shall we say, equivalent of that when it comes to data transfers from, for example, Germany or France or whatever to the United States. But, and here the differences begin at this point, the model clauses don't relate specifically to the United States. It's any third country outside of your European economic area. So that makes it different. And it's a set of contractual clauses. It looks like an agreement. It starts off, it has a lot of clauses, and it ends with signatures and certain appendices. And you know, one can like them or not. They're a different kind of instrument. So what we've had, what we've read a lot over the past months in even qualified, shall we say, papers, you know, is that the fact that the safe harbor framework is dead also means that the EU model clause idea is dead. That is not the case. It can't be because it works completely differently. The only thing that we can think about is whether some of the accusations that the ICJ directed at the Commission kind of applies by analogy to the EU model clauses as well. And that could be, of course, the non-assessment of a certain status of data protection law. But that is obviously not the case, because the very idea of the model clause is that in the recipient country, there is no adequate data protection level. Otherwise, you don't need them. So there is no requirement for the Commission to assess a certain state. All they have to do is come up with a set of clauses that in themselves, or by themselves, allow for a sufficient amount of trust that the recipient company will treat the personal data as prescribed. So there is no direct spillover. And I don't know if you've heard about that discussion, but a lot of people say, well, you can't transfer data to the United States. There is no, at this point, there is no tool that you can use to make that happen. That's not true. And the authorities have admitted as much. I mean, they've never really liked the model clauses, the member state authorities, but they can't help it because it's a Commission decision that at this point has a statutory power. So it's binding. You know, no member state authority can say, I don't recognize the model clause framework. But those remain for now. But people have been trying, and there is at least one case underway, it seems, to bring the model clause questions, whichever they may be, up to the European Court of Justice as well. Because it's the same impetus that people have, saying safe harbor doesn't work, model clauses don't work, and the only institution that can say that is the court. So let's bring it up to the court. So what I can tell you is for now they exist, but they may not forever. I'll skip the alternative instruments, by the way, because they're not really interesting. Of course, if an individual says, like, really freely and expressly consents to data being transferred to the United States, that overrules everything. But the question in those cases is always, is it really a free and informed decision? And the authorities, for the most part, rightly or wrongly, tend to assume that if it's a big company on the one hand, an individual on the other hand, it's never a free and informed decision. Plus, for the most part, they don't consider the privacy policies that are published on the websites sufficient information, because, and in part, at least for the if you look at, and I'm certainly not like a Google or Facebook hater, but if you look at the privacy policies that they publish, you don't really learn a whole lot when you read that. And not even my, I write those things, and so yeah, it's rather opaque, as Boris Johnson would say. Yes, well, the EU is opaque. We all know that. We just today we've learned that. Sadly, I might add. And what the data protection authorities have done is they have granted a grace period up until the end of February of this year. That's gone. So if companies and thousands still do rely on safe harbor, they actually committing an unlawful act. And in Hamburg, the local DPA has kind of tried to set an example by actually handing down administrative fines. They're not particularly high, of course, it's more like a symbol. But they did that to make it clear to companies that when they mean end of February, they actually mean end of February. So they started proceedings in immediately afterwards just to make the point. So safe harbor is really dead. Now on to replacing or trying to replace safe harbor with something better, something that the Court of Justice may possibly actually allow. Because of course, the Privacy Shield, once it's done, will be brought up to the Court of Justice as soon as possible by someone. So that's for sure. It won't last unchecked as long as safe harbor has. Safe harbor has been was in place for 15 years. And the new framework will be tested, I'm assuming, within the first 1 or 2 years of its existence. Now, what are people trying to do? When we talk about replacing safe harbor in a formal sense and how it is structured, it's actually rather similar. So again, it will be a commission decision with a capital D binding upon the member states that says that if companies comply with a certain set of principles and if they set up themselves in certain formal ways and register for a list and do this, that, and the other, self-certifying themselves, they are suitable recipients for personal data from the EU. So it's the same basic idea as safe harbor was. They're just trying to do a better job. Whether they've done that is a different question. What we know at this point, and I can only say we gotta be a bit cautious. We have an outdated draft of the end of February of this year, and people are working rapidly on the whole thing. So even though it hasn't been published, we can assume that there is a more current state of the draft that will at least in part look differently. So I don't know what's gonna be in the Privacy Shield decision at this point. But probably the general setup is the same, and the way it's supposed to work, it's a lot of stuff, a lot of text, like 30, 50, 40 pages where the commission explains how it came to its decision, the background of it, the principles behind it, and all that. And the actual core of the thing will be placed in annexes. There will be an annex 2 that essentially contains the rules that people need to follow. And then there's a bunch of other annexes, 6 to get altogether, where certain US authorities, in letter form, explain how US law will work, how it will work also in context with the new safe harbor principles, Privacy Shield principles, and what they do to control it, and what recourse people have in the United States, and there are different points of contact and all that. So it's not going to be a treaty where you have the TV cameras rolling and people get out their fountain pens and you have flags in the background and people sign. It'll be a piece of paper, essentially, or online, but I don't mean it's going to be paper, a PDF, published by the commission that kind of contains other pieces of paper where the US says this is what we'll do to safeguard the entire framework. It's close to treaty, but it won't be. This is one of the criticisms, essentially, because it's you know, people say it's empty promises, essentially. Now, there's two. What will happen then is that if a U.S. company self-certifying itself registers for that list, it'll be bound to the principles that the Safe Harbor Annex 2 contains. There will be certain checks and safeguards. I'll get to those. But it's a self-certifying process. So in that sense, it's the same thing as Safe Harbor, which of course leads to the corresponding criticism. And the, from a European perspective, what will also remain the same is that no matter how well or badly the system works in the United States, it'll always be the company in Europe who remains responsible for what happens with the data. They remain responsible for the decision to transfer the data to the United States. And if things go badly, they've got to stop it. So they can't say, well, we did everything right. What matters, what will matter, is that the result remains right. And if it's not, it's got to stop. But that's nothing new either. That's the same thing as we had prior to 2015. In terms of what the U.S. companies have to do, have to comply with, not that much changes. There's more wordings and the principles are more detailed, but the general way to handle this is the same. What does change is, at least on paper, of course, the commitment of the United States government to actually look out for the system, to control it, and to get there, shall we say, the EU has required, from their perspective, a lot of information on how things work in the United States, in particular, of course, with a view to the intelligence community, shall we say, and they have received information. Now, of course, we can debate for months and months and months whether that information is telling, sufficient, detailed enough, but they have received 10, 20 pagers by various authorities explaining certain things. And, you know, we go back to the accusation that the Commission did not assess the state of the data protection laws in the United States when it did Safe Harbor. That's essentially the way that by which the Commission wants to make sure that this time it has assessed the situation with sufficient comprehensiveness. So that's what they do to protect themselves against, or try to do, to protect themselves against experiencing the same result, you know, before the court another time, or a second time. And that was one of the elements that was missing in Safe Harbor. Safe Harbor was really nothing. Now, what they were trying to do when setting up the principles is they were trying, and I use the word try on purpose, try to mirror, reflect essentially the current data protection directive that forms the basis of all the national data protection laws in Europe at this point. We'll get something else in 2 years, but for now that's the way it is. So they've tried to come up with a set of principles, a set of, you know, what do I have to do, or what do I, can I not do when I'm in a company. And they'll write, there's simply a list. And I don't think it will be particularly fruitful to really have an in-detail look at this point. What the principals want to achieve, and they don't, but what they want to achieve is essentially, you know, kind of transferring our principles or regulation on data protection to the United States, which will never work. But it's an attempt. But when you read it, not this, but when you compare it So what we have in Europe, it takes 5 seconds to notice that it is not congruent. It is not the same thing. There's a lot of gaps, a lot of contradictions at this point. The way it's drafted at the moment, I'm sticking my head out, but I predict that it will never pass an ICJ test. But then again, I'm not the only smart guy in the room, so people have seen that, and I know that people are working on a text as we speak, and they have for the past 3 months. So this is not the final state of things. There'll be more work done on that. Because, of course, the data protection people in Europe, it only took a couple of days, essentially, for people to realize that there's a lot of things to be criticized. And just some of those, some of them are kind of like of a principle, almost political nature, and other criticisms are really only for lawyers, shall we say, but they're not less important when it comes to actually working with the thing in real life. What they're saying is that the whole thing is just super complicated. You got to skip back and forth to find stuff. And, you know, from a scientific perspective, that may not be so bad. So it's just a bit more work, but you'll find it. But in practice, that's a bad thing for a statute. And essentially, it is a statute. You have to be able to apply it to a real life situation without taking 2 hours to find the different bits that you need to qualify a situation. So it's just simply badly drafted. Even worse, the terminology doesn't fit at all with our data protection terminology. And even worse, it's inconsistent and contradictory, at least in the current draft, like in itself. There's stuff that simply doesn't go together. There is a choice principle, which is not a choice principle, but an opt-out option, which is not quite the same. And then you don't know when you can exercise it, for example. And one of the things, just to give you an example, one of the things you're supposed to opt out of, be able to opt out of, is to say, I want no onward transfer. You know, if you, US company, receive certain data about me, I want to say, that's fine, but you can't transfer that data onwards to someone else for whatever reason. I can opt out of that. Now, you got to ask the question, why do I actually have to opt out of it? Does that mean if I don't opt out, is it lawful to transfer the data onwards? And if yes, why, on what basis should that be the case? And then you look at another principle that says, well, you can only do stuff with data if it is within the original purpose for why you collected the data in the first place. So those things don't really go together. If I say that I have a purpose limitation, how would I ever, or in most cases, why would I be allowed to transfer the data onwards? Why should someone have to opt out of something that, well, according to one's principles, shouldn't be lawful in the first place? So there's a lot of that stuff. You can do 10 or 15 within 2 minutes if you look at it with an experienced eye. So there's a lot of work to be done. And those things, they're not petty business. It's one thing to like something on a political level or on an abstract level, and you can discuss whatever, but if you have a set of legal rules that you cannot apply, you can simply forfeit the political discussion, because it's not simply not going to work. And as we stand, I don't think it's going to work, regardless of whether I like it or not. Now, again, they say, Commission, you can't do your job assessing how things work in the United States by letting other people tell you how it works. You have to look at it yourself. And the letters that you receive, the representations that you receive, don't do the job. So that's another criticism, which will play a role in a assumed court case, because that was the reason why Safe Harbor was shot down.
There is no agreement at this point of when do we apply the whatever US set of data protection rules to a case, and when do we apply European set of rules. And a lot of work has gone into that very question when they came up with the Data Protection Directive in 95. And now we have the Data Protection Regulation, which has actually entered into force and will be applicable in 2 years' time. A lot of thought has gone into that, and the Privacy Shield doesn't simply kind of, it steps away from that question, but that's a very core question, because if you're an individual and you want to take recourse to someone, you have to tell the court why you, on what set of rule, on which basis you want to do that. And it's something that I think to make it work, you'd have to require the framework to provide a solution for that question. Otherwise, you know, the judicial recourse that they want to establish, simply, how is that supposed to work? And it'll make everything very difficult, very complicated, and very risky for anyone to claim their rights. So that's another criticism right there. They say, you know, the critics say that even though we, you know, the commission has received information on how the intelligence and on what basis the intelligence community in the United States essentially draws data, it's still not enough. We still don't know enough. Now, that's, of course, never going to change, if we're honest, so that criticism will never disappear for reasons of logic. There is no rule on when data actually at some point has to be deleted, because, you know, you collect it for some reason and that purpose normally expires at some point. No one ever deletes data, at least not if they're not forced to. So that's a problem. And yeah, the rest is just a bit specific, shall we say. I'll skip that. So now, what will happen? Of course, I don't know. As I said, the representatives of the member states still have to consent to whatever draft we end up with. We don't know the draft yet. We don't know what improvements may have been made. But I expect, and it usually happens on EU level, the member states will consent in the end, because, you know, they spend so much energy on the regulation that's taken 4 years to finalize, that I don't think that anyone will really, you know, deny the commission their consent, because that would mean that, you know, from a business perspective, people would run into huge problems, and that on EU level simply won't happen. So there will be consent, so we'll probably have something. I don't know if we have something by August, but this year probably. We'll have a, you know, improved safe harbor too. And once that's in place, it's binding. You can use it, you as a company, you can rely on it. But on the first day it's in place, people will again try to shoot it down. And if it does not change fundamentally, it might well be shot down within the first 1 or 2 years. Because, you know, the reasons that the ICJ gave provide sufficient ground, if you apply them strictly, to shoot that down as well. And, you know, the court doesn't even have to go into the details. You know, it's just the directive calls for a comparable level of data protection in the two countries involved, or EU on the one hand and the recipient country on the other hand. And that simply is not the case. It's not comparable. I'm not going to say it's worse or better. That's a debate for another day. But it's certainly not comparable. So if that's the test, comparability, it'll fail. That's what I believe, at least. So the bottom line is, today, And in 1 year's time and 2 years' time, I think that it'll be and remain very difficult to transfer data to the United States and other countries, by the way. But we always focus on the United States, so, you know, for historic reasons. It'll remain difficult in legal terms. And companies, and but they have done in the past, and I'm sure they will do in the future as well, they're willing to take that risk because they don't have a choice. The question, of course, is product-wise, will we have, will the consumer or the company customer have, well, alternative products that essentially, you know, offer the same or comparable quality and range? And because when we look at it, the reason why that, at least for most people, hasn't been the case is because, you know, the competition doesn't work. Essentially, so there were, you know, no one, we wouldn't be talking Facebook and Google this or that if there was an alternative, you know, but there isn't, and since there, well, there hasn't been, I don't know, but that essentially is the reason behind the whole problem, because from a company's perspective, you know, of course that's an attorney's perspective as well, is at this, you know, at this point most companies say, I don't have a choice. I simply don't have a choice in business terms. I have to, for example, startups. I want to use Amazon Web Services. Give me something else, but I don't know it. I'll just use it because everyone else does. And I know it works, supposedly. So that's and that won't change. You know, Privacy Shield, whatever. It's going to be the same question, and the only solution really lies, you know, in competitive products, really. And we'll see where we end up. No one knows at this point. So I thank you for your attention. I know it's not it's not for everyone, that stuff. But you've been quiet. So I thank you for that. You could have been typing. Well, and thank you for having me.